go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 115 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. If you are watching via YouTube, I thank you very much, and you may also notice that I am wearing a new pair of frames. These cost the B-Man $420 plus tax. Please let me know down in the comments whether they are worth the price of admission or not. I get bored of the way I look, and I'm afraid of needles. Therefore, I'm not going to get tattoos or piercings, and I have no hair. So frames are really the only thing I can do to change the appearance of my face. And I get bored of my face, the B-Man that is because I spend hours a week editing video of myself, and I look at it's just so bland and white and non-descriptive. So I said, hey, let's go out, buy a fancy pair of frames. Let me know. All right, enough of that vanity. Let's get into the episode. Some real heavy dirt. I've been consciously aware of the fact that the content that I am consuming is beginning to shift. Now, the last, how long has it been? About the last 3 to 5 years, it's all been conspiracy theories. We've been through this, and when you're a male, white male, that is past the age of 30, now past the age of 40, not married without kids, you get into conspiracy theories. My top conspiracy theory is 9/11. I still love it. I will always love it. I believe so. I love lizard people, political, the Vatican, religions, the Red Shoe Club, you name it, the Colorado airport. I could go on and on and on. I watch documentaries, podcasts, videos, books, conspiracy theories. When I was bored, that was my go-to, but it has changed. In the last month or so, I find myself watching old documentaries of pimps from the 1970s. Now, I've always glamorized pimps. Now, I know they're horrific people, and if you ask any police or anyone in law enforcement, and you ask them, hey, who's the worst type of criminal you've had to deal with during your career? They will all, to a man or lady, tell you pimps, because they take advantage of women and they beat women up and they manipulate people and they use, we know what pimps are. I don't need to get through it. But I know it's wrong, but I do glamorize the lifestyle of a pimp, especially 1970s. So I'm actually listening to this audiobook now, the autobiography of a pimp that goes by the name, Iceberg Slim. And I know of other pimps because this is a genre I'm into now. So there's Iceberg Slim. I'm watching or listening to his autobiography. There's another Slim. There's a Fillmore Slim. There's Dwan, Dwan Magic, Red. There's a bunch of them, all from the 70s. And it's just so... watching and listening to this 60 Minutes documentary or segment they did on pimps in the 1970s. And they talked about pimps in New Haven. And I spend some of my time in New Haven, so I was really drawn to it. And there's something about the way the tone of the reporter of the 1970s and the way they describe pimps, they describe them with such contempt that you get with the tone of their voice, and they won't just say the pimp's name. They won't just say Iceberg Slim. They'll preface the name of the pimp by saying three or four adjectives, negative adjectives, and each one with a little bit more anger in the reporter's voice before they introduce you to the name of the pimp. And it's so, like, I think it's comical. But I have a fucked up personality, a fucked up, demented, a sense of humor. So it makes me giggle. And I drive in my car, and I know I should be driving, but I'm kind of watching the documentary or the 60 Minutes segment. And in a way, they talk about the downtown New Haven and the pimp talking shit. And I'm like, wow, maybe that's the street I live on. And he's like, wow, I'm walking the same streets a pimp walked on. And I, again, I know it's horrendous. There is part of the B-man. Like, I do want to be a pimp. And I know that is an impossibility because I have yet to be in a fist fight. Now, you can't be a 40-year-old who grew up in the suburbs, went to college, works in corporate America, has never been in a fist fight, and then become a pimp. Yeah, because to be a pimp, sometimes you need to get physical altercations with your whores. And you can't do that when you're a 40-year-old who's never been in a fist fight. Those two just do not jive together. So I will never be one. In another world, maybe I would have been. Maybe I would have been a damn effective pimp. But in this world, I would last maybe 15 minutes. I'd get myself a whore. She wouldn't pay me the money after turning the trick. And then all right. I'm such a pushover. All right. Well, come back. Meet me here tomorrow. And maybe you'll give me the full money tomorrow. Okay. And then she'd be with another pimp by, Friday afternoon. What it is, the reason why I glamorize pimp is because the language they use. If you listen to Iceberg Slim's autobiography, the audiobook, the language he uses, it is poetic. Now, it is drama. Drama is filled with violence and misdeeds and misactions. But this, the dress, to wear a mink coat with a feathery hat with a feather sticking out and walking. When you're walking with a cane, when you don't need a cane, that's pimp. That's pimp attitude. And that's part of the reason why I won't say I don't like, but who's that famous rapper? Snoop Dogg. Hey, Snoop Dogg, he kind of embodies pimp attitude, but I don't know, but I don't think in real life he's an actual pimp. So it's almost Snoop Dogg is stealing the value of real pimps. So that's why I've always looked at Snoop Dogg a little bit crooked, even though I do enjoy his music. He's stealing the value of real pimps. They're out on the street working it or having their ladies work it. And I've always, the B-man, there's something about that I do not appreciate. I look down upon him, Snoop Dogg, doing that. But yeah, just the way they dress with the fancy shoes that are always shined with the box car and the bell-bottom pants and walking with the cane. And true story, the B-man, when I was, I think I was 11 or 12, I asked my parents if they could get me a cane for Christmas. And even at that young of an age, I wanted that pimp energy. You know, they talk about big dick energy. No, it's not big dick energy. It's pimp energy. That is the energy that you're thinking of when you say you want big dick energy. You want that 70s pimp. You want that Iceberg Slim energy that he oozes. That's what you want from your man. Yeah. I will never be a pimp, but that is the genre. Every documentary, every audiobook, every YouTube video, my feed is just, it's all pimps from the 1970s. It's going to be a wild next 2 to 3 years to see where this leads up to it. Okay. Let's continue with Something I found on Reddit. All right, this comes from the subreddit. Managers. Managers. Okay. New hire went to strip club and skips work next day. Flew a new hire to a conference in Vegas for his first week of work. Show up to the conference one morning, a new hire is missing. Ask around. Turns out he was late at the strip. Sorry, he was out late at the strip club. Didn't show up for the booth. Also, he was almost an hour late for his first real day in office the following Monday. What feedback do I give him? I'm willing to give him a second chance, but want to set appropriate expectations. Well, just before we go any further, I just want to say this new hire of yours is a huge fan of Verbal Graffiti. So we do appreciate you giving your new hire a second chance. Now, oddly enough, now you are right to be angry and you are right to need to set the tone and have a meeting with this new employee and let him know that his actions so far, his first few days of work, are not appreciated and will not be allowed. And if they continue, he will be terminated. But in a sense, in an odd sense, you do have to appreciate his behavior, this new hire of yours. And maybe you should go as far to thank him. Maybe not him, but don't tell him that you're thankful, but internally, you should be thankful that he's letting you know who he really is. Now, you know, all right? Within a week of hiring this guy, you know exactly who he is as an employee. If you send him on another convention, especially to Vegas, you know. He's not going to show up at the booth. He's going to show up a few hours late, with bags under his eyes and glitter all over his untucked button down. You know, during football season, NFL football season, that every Monday morning, you cannot schedule a meeting between this new hire and a valuable client of yours, because he's not going to be an effective employee until he has his obligatory 3 cups of shitty office coffee and a breakfast burrito. So scheduling a 9 a.m. meeting is a waste of time for him and the company and all your clients. Like, he's being righteous. What your employee is doing or has done in 1 week at your company under your management is he's setting frame. Now, most of us, when we think of frame, we think so in terms of red pill and relationships, loving relationships, that is. Now, what he's doing now is he's setting his frame in management subordinate, like that type of relationship. Like, and in a way, you really do. Now, while you do need to have that meeting with him to let him know this is not okay, that his actions and the frame he's trying to set, he is like he's not bullshitting you. Like, he's not. Let's think about how many new hires you have come on board who everything they told you during the interview process was utter and complete bullshit. They told you they loved the culture and that's why they wanted to come work for the company, and that they'd come in early and that they'd stay late and they'd work on extra projects and they pick up work when other employees are out on PTO, and they give you the dog and pony show, and they give you all the references, and they come on board and you think you got an A+ employee, and they act that way for the first month or the first 90 days during that probation period. But once the probation period is over, that employee, that facade they put up comes down. They show up a little late. They leave a little early. They're pretending to work at their desk, but what they really do is they move their mouse every few minutes to make it look like they're actually doing work on their laptop, and they're actually only working 15 hours out of the 40 plus hours they're supposed to be working each week. And they become, you know, they go from being, you hire that person thinking they're going to be an A plus employee, but within a month or two, they go down to the mean, and they're just like every other employee, just doing what they have to do to get by and get paid every 2 weeks. Now, that is the employee that you should be pissed off with, because that's the proverbial wool over your eyes, that you got fooled. But this new employee, like, he ain't, there's nothing about him that shit. Like, is he a bad employee? Yes, he is. But he's not lying to you. And I'd rather have a bad employee who's honest than an employee who's telling me they're going to be, you know, they're going to be Steve Jobs when they're really just some no-name guy in corporate HR. Like that, like this guy, you almost have to embrace him. This is like, he is the Allen Iverson of your company. Now, if you don't know anything about Allen Iverson, he played for the 76ers. He was famous for, he would stay out till, he would never pack a suitcase in the NBA. Right? They travel every other day. He would never bring a suitcase. Wherever they would land, he'd go shopping, buy a new fresh outfit, go to his strip club. He'd fuck strippers till after sunrise. He'd go to the casinos. He'd sleep all day. Then he'd drop 40 points with a game-winning shot every other game. And he brought the 76ers to the finals. And another guy's Luka Doncic, right? Maybe he has a drinking problem. Maybe he likes to drink too much beer. But you know where he was last June? The NBA Finals. What I'm getting at here is, not everybody has to be an upstanding employee. Like it's okay to have one or two employees that beats to their own drum, that lives a little lively, that doesn't come in every Monday morning talking about the weather and what show they watch on Netflix. Like this guy, this employee, he's alpha. And what he's going to do is he's going to change the culture of your company and of your team for the better. He's going to come in on Monday morning, or sorry, like late Monday morning, 11 a.m. And he's going to take your boring team of all the guys and gals who wear the khakis and the button down that they bought from Target and that brown bag their lunch every day. And he's going to introduce you to the hot spots around the city. He's going to introduce you to the VIP lounges. And what's going to happen is you and your team, you're going to go out with him, and he's going to introduce you to a beautiful people that you've never met before. And suddenly, you're going to have clients and new employees that are young and attractive and hip. And suddenly, your company is going to have a vibe to it, and people are going to want to work for you. You're not going to have to go to LinkedIn. They're going to come to you, and your team is going to, it's going to have some cocaine in your blood, and you're going to, it's going to be hip. And it's all because of this one alpha new employee, because he's got some dog in him. And every team that's ever worked their iota, has ever held up the trophy at the end of the playoffs, has had a teammate or two that's got that dog in him. And that's what this guy has. He's got some dog in him. So instead of trying to suppress that, let him be who he be. You know, he's him, as they say, and he's gonna bring an energy. And yeah, you're gonna have to corral him at some point, at some times. But you gotta let him fly. You gotta let him bring some strippers and some whores and some seedy characters who might have drugs in their pockets, and they know they do whippets and they have drugs that you've never heard of, and they talk about science in terms of synthetics, and just enjoy this guy for who he is. And if you do, if you allow him to be himself and bring beautiful and eccentric people to your company, notice that your bonuses will increase each quarter. And everybody loves a bonus. So even though he's playing by his own rules, people in the office will snicker and they'll complain and they'll bitch and they'll go to HR. But when the it's all about the buck. And when you have more money in your pocket because of his ways and his sales methods, no one will be complaining then. So take this guy for who he is and let him be the Lawrence Taylor of your company. Let him go out to 4 a.m. Let him show up a little late. Let him bring in some clients that are more attractive, that have a vision. Let him be him. And then just notice how the morale of your company, even though it seems like there'll be bitterness, it'll turn that frown upside down when those bonuses start to come in. So let him be, just let him be that guy. And if he's just if he flails out real quick, like so many, if he turns out to be the, who's it? The Len Bias of your, if you fire him within 2 months because he's just too much of a wild card, it will give you fodder. It'll give everybody someone to laugh about years and years down the road. So either way, this guy, he's going to frustrate your life as a manager, but he's going to make money, or he's going to make memories if he flails out within the next couple weeks. So enjoy the ride. Right? Because there's something to ride now. Let's go look in some photos. Let's get to it. Episode 115, segment 2. I want to let all of you know, all of you that have an STD or an STI or have crippling student debt or having your house be foreclosed on or have numerous outstanding parking tickets or have just been broken up with by the love of your life. Or have forgotten your Gmail password, or have a roommate that set your apartment on fire and now you're homeless or unhoused. If you've been disowned by your parents, if you're any of those type of people, I want you all to know that we, Verbal Graffiti, are here for you. We'll always be here for you. That is until I quit this project. That is Verbal Graffiti. But until that date, all of you are down in the dumps. Have nowhere. You can't see the light because you're so far down. We are the light, Verbal Graffiti. It might be neon. It might be a little discolored. It's not the heaven light, but it is a light. We're not the North Star, but we are a star. All right, I'm not a gamer. I have pain in my fingers. The last real console I played a significant amount of time would be a Sega Genesis ABC. Anything more complicated than that, the B-Man, I am out. I am not that intelligent. Can't play those games. But are there prison video games, whether it's a console or a PC game? I would fuck with a prison game. I'm talking a real prison life game where you go into prison, then you start race wars and you're trying to get contraband and you're trying to get packs of ramen noodle, and there are prisons all across the country or all across the globe that you can go into, kind of like with Madden, where you could play a season with different teams and players. Same thing with prison. You do Rikers Island or the federal prison in Colorado, or you can do like a local state prison or wherever. You go all these different prisons and then you kind of do a league, a fantasy league. And you start race wars and you start fucking the female, what do you call those? The people, the female, the guy where, what do you know, what the officers that zap you, and then you go down in the hole and then you try to fight your way out, and then you're actually in the hole for 24 hours without communication with the VR headset on, and then you're trying to sneak out, and then you're working out in the yard, and you're shanking people in the in the chow hall and how you're like you annually get inside of your cellmate and then you kill him and then you're paying off the guards. That's it, the guards. Yeah, you fuck the female guard, you know, the floozy who works there, and you emotionally manipulate her over time because that's all you got in prison. All you got is time. So you manipulate her and you go to one place in the prison where she knows there's no cameras, then you doggy her, and so you make her your bitch, and then you try to become the top dog, and then you fight the Hell's Angels, but then you got the MS-13, and you join the gangs, and you get transferred to another prison, and you gotta work your way back up, and you give yourself tattoos. Are there any games like that? It's the only thing close to that. What's that game that's coming out? The one where the cars, Grand Theft Auto. Hey, I want Grand Theft Auto, but in prison. Right? Like, there's Grand Theft Auto. I think number 6 is coming out, or maybe number 5 later this year. Is there a prison game similar to that? Similar in vain? I just want to be able to beat up a correction facility officer. Like a correction officer, I just want to hit him over the head. I want to shake him in the back. I want to have sex with one of those floozies who works there. I want to be the top dog in the yard. I want to do pull-ups. I want to get tattoos on my face. I want to get transferred to Colorado. I actually don't want any of that. But I want the video game play version of that. So if that's out there, if there's a game, let the B-Man know. And I will quit verbal graffiti and pursue whatever that video game is. Let's continue with verbal graffiti. I found this one on the subreddit, Stripper. How much do you charge when a customer comes in their pants? ? Personally, money doesn't cover the disgust rage that I feel, but I charge $200. This is very confusing to the B-Man. Now, the B-Man, I am not a stripper guy. I'm not a gentleman's club guy because, B-Man, I am not a gentleman. As I mentioned in the previous episode, I'm a misogynist. I am a sexist. I am a judgmental person. But I feel very, as you may have noticed the last, if you've watched all 115 episodes of Verbal Graffiti, I get very in my head. I have this internal dialogue. So being at a strip club, that only, it's that talking to myself, an HGH to the nth degree. And I can't get comfortable in that type of the gentleman's club environment. I think everybody's looking at me, although they're all looking at the babes. So I'm going to speak at a school with this one. I might be out of pocket. So any of you Johns who describe yourselves as a strip club nudie bar guy, tell me if I'm wrong with this. But as a stripper, if you are a stripper, it seems to me that there would be no higher form of flattery than a John hawking a dick loogie inside his pants as you, the stripper, are gyrating on his groin. To me, that does seem like that is the peak of being a stripper, is it not? Let me explain. Now, I've never gotten a lap dance. Because I don't frequent strip clubs very, very often. And when I do, I am cheap. I am the guy in the second row. I'll throw a few singles here and there, but I'm not spending $75. But if I ever did, I would have to imagine. I know how my body works. I know how Mr. Perfect works. Mr. Perfect, if you're unaware, is my penis, the name for my penis, my lovely penis. But, all right, this is all hypothetical again because I've never gotten a lap dance before. But if I was at a nudie bar, a titty bar, a strip club, a gentleman's club, a nightclub, and a lady of the night took me to the champagne room, I know how my anatomy works. Like if this stripper was giving me a lap dance. A single mother with her deflated tits and her C-section scar, and she was her ass was all up on my groin, like she was doing carnival tricks on my waist. Mr. Perfect would get stiff. I would get a raging stiffy. But as a stripper, like, don't you expect that to happen? And when I'm stiff, sometimes, especially if there's an actual female in that area, I'm going to hawk a dick loogie. And you're going to feel the remnants of that wetness. So I would, like, it's not my fault. Is what I think that's the conclusion I'm making. It is not my fault if I hawk a dick loogie during a private lap dance, because I'm doing nothing. I'm a John. I'm in a champagne room. I paid $75 for a dance for a song. My hands are by my side. I am a respectful patron of the strip club, of the art form, and you're doing all those carnival moves where unhooking your bra. You're unhooking your bra, so you're topless. You're grinding up on my groin. You're whipping your hair back by my neck. You're whispering sweet nothings into my ear. If I don't hawk a dick loogie, if I don't even get stiff, there's no remnants of a stiffy as a stripper. That's your cue to hang up your stilettos and call it a career. Because as a John, if you can't get a John a stiffy while you're on top of him in the champagne room, you're not doing your job. And you don't deserve a shift on the weekend. So again, that's not my fault. Like, go look at the security footage. Go look at it. I'm doing nothing. All the work. So if you're all up on me and I hawk a dick loogie, how can you blame me? It's my anatomy. Like, you can't fault me for being topless on top of me, on top of Mr. Perfect. And if I hawk a dick loogie, like in my Wrangler jeans, and you feel it, how can you be angry with me? Was it Biggie who said, don't hate the player, hate the game? That's the game. And as a member of the game, you should be appreciative of when a John hawks a dick loogie inside his Wranglers while he's paying you $75 for a lap dance. Because as a stripper, you know time equals money. So if you're able to make your John hawk a dick loogie before the third chorus of whatever song that's being played while you dance for him, that's time you're saving. Because once he hawks a dick loogie, dance over, take your $75, and go find another John. So a premature ejaculator as a stripper, like, that's the best John you can have, because it's saving you time and it's more time for you to make money from other Johns. So why are you complaining, bitching about this patron? I believe, and again, I might be speaking out of school, out of pocket. This is not an area I have much experience with. We need to have a code of ethics between strippers and Johns, our patrons, when it comes to hawking a dick loogie prematurely, especially during a one-on-one or a one-on standing still dance. I believe if you're a stripper and you have a patron who hawks a dick loogie, you should be allowed to complain or laugh or tease that John in the locker room. You go back to the locker room, all the other strippers there, you can talk shit about the John who just and has to run out to his car. You're allowed to laugh in the locker room. But once you leave the premises of the strip club, of the locker room, you got to stay quiet. Because when it comes down to it, that John who just paid you $75 for that lap dance, he's paying for your kid's hot lunch. And you got to be respectful of that. And if you start yapping and you start going to Reddit and you start teasing and talking about how upset you are that the Johns are doing a are hawking their dick loogies in the champagne room, in the back room. The Johns talk. We talk amongst each other. So we're going to be less apt to go to your strip club if we know we're going to be teased and made fun of and be bullied because sometimes we can't control our entire anatomy. And you're going to lose business because of that. And then your kids, you know, they're not going to be able to eat lunch and they're going to die of malnutrition. And none of us want that, the Johns or the strippers. That way, just keep it in the locker room. Have fun with all the other gals in there. But as soon as you leave there, you got to leave it. You got to leave it there. And Johns, try to be better. You know, try to be better. Try to contain yourself. But again, sometimes it's so hard for me to be critical of the John in this instance because like, how can I tell John, hey, don't hawk a dick loogie when you have a lady dancing in front of you, topless with a G-string, and she's bent over and you can see her balloon knot. Like how can you not hawk a dick loogie in that instance? So be better, stripper. You're actually doing what you should do. You're making guys hawk their dick loogies while you dance on them. So you're doing your job. You can keep your stilettos, but stop bitching about it. Right? Don't hate the player, hate the game. We are going to continue reading A Salesman's Wife. I believe you're on top of page 99. Aaron Judge, MVP this past baseball season, dropped the ball. Fifth inning of Game 5 of the World Series. I have not forgotten that. All right, we're going to get to top of page 99. We'll read two pages together aloud. In the dark second floor room of the huge brick mansion, Justin and Mavis Carlsberg sat talking quietly with a young man in his late teens. He was an extremely handsome boy with curly reddish-colored hair and a wholesome, clean-cut face. Stringily tinged with a trace of dark sensuality, his lean 5'11" frame, clad with tight blue flared trousers and loose-flowing white shirt, sprawled arrogantly in one of the comfortable armchairs, while he puffed languidly on a cigarette. "Well, Garrett," the doctor was saying, "how is your senior year at State going?" "As usual," the young man replied. "Classes are a bore, but there's plenty of extracurricular activities, if you know what I mean." His parents laughed at his remark. "You're just like your father," Mavis said, "always a hit with the women." "You don't do so badly yourself," the doctor remarked to his wife. "That's true," she said with a sly smile on her face. "It's a shame you'll be going back tomorrow, son," Justin said. "We miss you when you're not here, of course. I suppose you'll have quite a bit to do to occupy your mind when you return." "Oh, yes," Garrett replied wryly. Quite a bit. Sometimes I can barely get the time to study for exams. I have to pick of the co-eds because of your training. Dad, I can't thank you enough." "My pleasure," Justin replied with a wink. "You should enjoy yourself while you can. Is there anything we can do for you?" Mavis asked her son. "After all, it's your last day. If we can make it more pleasant in any way, you have only to ask." "Well," Garrett said thoughtfully, "there is one thing." "Yes?" Carlsberg asked. Garrett's upper lips curled slightly, and a devilish glint came to his eyes. "I've been feeling a little restless today," the young man said, "and I was wondering if there wasn't some way I could get rid of the tension." His hands dropped to his crotch, and he began to stroke it very lightly. "I'd sure appreciate it." My, the doctor remarked. "You certainly are growing up, as a matter of fact. I may have just what you're looking for. One of my more delectable patients is coming to see me this afternoon, and I think she's just your type. About your age, too, and quite ravishing." Mavis sat up in her chair and leaned in toward her husband. "Justin, you mean the Burns woman?" "Exactly. But you don't think that might be difficult? I mean, if she ever found out that Garrett was our son, she might be upset," She's still rather naive. Perhaps you're right, the doctor said. Why don't I simply tell her that Garrett is a young assistant, my protege? After all, that isn't far from the truth, now is it? No, Mavis replied, laughing. Not at all. Is that all right with you, son? Carlsberg asked. She's black-haired, blue-eyed, and has a figure that stops traffic. Ah, Garrett replied, still massaging his throbbing cock. That sounds delightful. In fact, the doctor said, we can arrange to meet with her together, if that's all right with you. All right, Garrett explained. It's perfect. Maybe I can pick up a few tricks from the old master while I'm at it. I'm sure you will, Mavis said, smiling. I'm sure you will. Go suck a fat one.